Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast.
Hey, everybody, Mark and Steve on the PBSC podcast. Glad you're all here with us. This is episode 190. And you'll notice the title, After My Lying and Gaslighting, My Partner Won't Believe Me. How do I show true empathy and rebuild trust?
That's quite the mouthful.
It's a big mouthful, isn't it? Yeah. Well, so this was sent into us by a person who calls himself a medium-term listener. Sounds like you might be listening, may have been listening to us for months or a year or better.
We'll take a medium-term listener.
Yeah, medium-term listener. I like it. So he sends in a pretty substantial communication to us. And in the first half, is very transparent and authentic in declaring himself to be an addict. He has suffered with both sexual pornography addiction as well as alcohol. So he has a dual addiction, doubly difficult. And he's been in recovery for about 90 days of sobriety from alcohol and pornography. He says he's on his 28th day free from masturbation. So this guy's involved with both Alcoholics Anonymous and Sexaholics Anonymous. He's in two different 12-step groups. He's got sponsors in both groups. Been working with a counselor. So this guy's doing the work, man. I mean,
yeah, there's a good amount going on here.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on. And so he describes how this is his second marriage. His first marriage sounds like a part of why it didn't make it was due to his addictions, especially pornography, which he says he was engaging in 3 to 4 times a week in his previous marriage. And so now he's in this relationship, and he's, as we said, got a good starting degree of sobriety. He's working it. He's in 12-step meetings. He's in therapy, doing a lot of stuff. But then he hears what he says after describing all of that. Making things worse. So in other words, you know, bringing all that into his second marriage, he made things worse. He said, I lied to my current partner and hid my porn use. And again, he reiterates now, and I have been sober from porn for about 3 months, even though his porn use before the 3 months of sobriety was only about once a month or less. So a lot better than in his first marriage with 3 to 4 times a week, he was gaslighting his current partner. I was gaslighting her as well, which clearly has not helped. Now she is aware of my disclosure, so he's fully disclosed everything, but here's where he runs into the proverbial challenge that we see so much. She does not believe me. Yeah. To add to the mix, she suffers from past trauma, including her upbringing and her prior relationships. So while I am sober now and have been honest with her now, I have an uphill battle to reestablish trust. Even in my sobriety, she believes I am still using, including as recently as last week. My sponsors have told me that I cannot control other people, which is correct. But I'm wondering, how can I go about reestablishing trust with my current partner? How can I learn to be more empathetic? How can I work to put us back on a solid foundation so I can repair the damage I've done, or at least try to repair the damage? Thanks.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Really good submission and a valid concern, and we can really appreciate this addict's position. We thank him for writing in. We know that these issues are difficult, they're complicated. We'll do our best to tackle as much as we can in a podcast forum. So I think the first thing that we ought to start off with is, as we kind of alluded to, I mean, congratulations on the hard work that you are doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. There are a lot of things happening here. It sounds like you've got a really good balance to recovery. We can definitely hear a lot of recovery tones in what you're mentioning and your desire to make changes. And so we really do applaud that. That said, there are obviously some things that can still be done, and there is some work to do. And so kind of addressing this first question that he's got, how can I learn to be more empathetic? We probably ought to start there. You know, if we talk about empathy for just a minute, and I know we talk about that on here quite often. You know, if we really look at empathy for what it is, empathy differs from sympathy in the sense that what we are trying to do when we empathize with another person is we are, as much as possible, right, trying to put ourselves in their shoes. And now that can be difficult in a lot of situations, especially in a betrayal dynamic, and in other dynamics where maybe we haven't experienced the exact same thing as another person. And we talk about this often in our Dare to Connect program, you know, this concept of empathy and, you know, how do we as addicts who have, you know, been betrayers extendedly, how do we connect with someone who's been betrayed to the degree that we have caused when maybe we have not experienced that ourselves? And the way that, you know, if we look at empathy, you know, on a core level for what it is, even though it is true that being able to relate to similar experiences as another person, in other words, if I'm able to go back in my mind and I'm able to look at past experiences that I have had that may reflect what this person is going through, that is one methodology for empathizing. One thing that makes, you know, our Dare to Connect program so unique, for example, in Mark and I's clinics is that we are addicts in long-term recovery. And so we can connect with your typical sex addict, sex and porn addict, probably a little bit better than maybe the typical. That being said, though, while that does give us an additional edge, I would be the first to say that in order to empathize with another person, me experiencing the same set of circumstances or the same things that person has experienced is not necessary. True empathy doesn't require us to have walked the exact same road. Empathy really revolves around being able to connect with the circumstances as they pertain to the feelings that the other person is feeling.
Right.
Right. So the context of what's going on. So my partner, when they feel betrayed, it's being able, if I want to connect with my partner, or if this listener wants to connect with his partner, step number one is going to be doing a little bit of legwork and in trying to connect with one's partner on a deeper level and be able to say, you know, I feel awful and terrible about this betrayal that I've caused. Can you, and I don't want to be triggering, but can you try to break down for me, you know, the emotions behind that for you? You know, I'd imagine that they're probably going to involve things like frustration or anger, being dealt with unjustly and other things. But for you, even though it's hard to hear, can you walk me through that? You know, can you help me understand, like when you reflect on the things that I've done that have been hurtful, can you help me to, can you walk me through kind of those emotional responses and that soup of emotion that happens for you? Because that is what's probably going to help me to be able to really connect, right, with what's happening, what's going on, and be able to cultivate that. And, you know, empathy is obviously made of a lot of things, but that beginnings, the beginnings there of being able to hear about another person's story, hear about their emotions, and then be able to reflect with the self on You know, what does it look like in times where I have experienced those things? What might it be like if I experienced that same cocktail of emotions? And if those emotions were sourced from the person that I trust and love the most, right? As we start to do things like that and ask ourselves those in-depth questions and really get vulnerable with that, and we fight through the shame and we practice shame resilience, something we teach often on D2C, that is where I think the real beginnings of that begin. Although there are other pieces to that as well. And Mark was actually, we were on a Dare to Connect session today, and this session, this topic just happened to come up. And Mark actually talked about this in a really great lens. So yeah, take it away, man.
Yeah, I love what you said, Steve. You know, if we can lean in, we often call it sitting in your partner's pain with them. If you can shift through your defensiveness and making it all about you and start to lean in and move over to their side of the street, you'll find as you ask them about what this has been like for them, what the betrayal has been like, the various emotions they identify are things that you're going to be able to relate to at some time in your life. You've felt those things.
Yeah.
Not the exact same experience, but the emotions. And once you get into that space, you know, this guy's working recovery. Let's say he starts to lean in and show empathy. One of the frustrations that we hear from guys in recovery is, when is my spouse or my partner going to start to get better? When are they going to start to heal? When are they going to start to, you know, kind of keep up with me? I'm making all this progress. I'm in recovery. Things are going great. I've got longer and longer periods of sobriety, but my partner seems to be lagging behind. Mm-hmm. And I remember how frustrating this was for me after actually a couple of years in recovery. I found that my wife started uncovering layers, and in some ways, my brain said, wow, this is getting worse, not better. Mm-hmm. I thought things were supposed to be really awesome now that I'm in solid recovery for, you know, years. And I had a really dear mentor of mine say, Mark, let me try to invite you to have some perspective on this. He said, how many years did you engage in addiction and gaslighting and secrecy and all the stuff that you heaped upon your wife? How long was that? For me, it was more than 30 years.
Mm.
So he said, so more than 30 years. He said, how long do you think you can be patient while your wife starts to kind of figure this out? And that really, you know, I had to step back and go, wow, okay. Okay, we're a couple of years in, right? I've been engaging in this gigantic car wreck. We had somebody in D2C say, yeah, I'm standing on the side of the road in this multi-decade car wreck, kind of giving myself CPR, you know, pumping on the chest, trying to bring this addict back to life. And my wife's just showing up on the scene, mm-hmm. getting out of her car and seeing this decades of wreckage. And I'm expecting her to just be right in sync, right? she's new on the scene. Like you said today, Steve, she's like a brand new person in medical school. And I'm this guy on the side of the road, you
EMT
know,
in training, and you're 30 years on the job.
Yeah. You're 30 years on the job and she's a new EMT. And you're like, what isn't she getting? When's she going to catch up here?
Why is this bothering you? Like, what's the problem? Like, it's a car wreck already. Get over it. Right.
Right.
It's just, but it really is true.
Yeah. That invited me to step back and go, okay, you know what? After everything she's been through, all the hell that I put her through, you know what? I can go through quite a bit actually.
Yeah.
It slowed me down to get patient and realize that her healing journey is her healing journey, just as my recovery is my recovery. It takes what it takes, and I can't force her or make her. In fact, if I get impatient and frustrated and try to push her along, I'm just going to exacerbate the trauma, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was going through the early stages of recovery and was having some similar thoughts and feelings in a different kind of set of circumstances, I did have someone close to me kind of point out, you know, that this was, even though what was going on in our relationship at the time wasn't fair, and there was a lot of harm that was being caused in this particular case on the part of my spouse, it was pointed out to me, you know, that this is a real opportunity to be there for your partner the way that she was there for years and years and years, you know, during these addiction years.
Yep.
And not that this is a quid pro quo, and you know, two situations can't be quantified or made equal by balancing, but this is an opportunity to provide some of that same kind of support and understanding that you've received. And that was a real eye opener. And so coming at it from all these different angles that we're talking about, that is how you, that, those are some great places to begin to cultivate the empathy piece, right? We understand the struggle as an addict. Inherently, we tend to be quite selfish, and we do that from, that's not a slam. I think it's just a reality. You know, when you get so embroiled around a behavior, in this case, a set of behaviors, chemical, sexual addiction, and you become increasingly dependent to the degree that many of us do on that for functioning day to day, or coping, or, you know, being able to exist or to medicate, we become very wrapped up in ourselves and just trying to, you know, cultivate some sort of homeostasis in our increasingly chaotic lives. That is, you know, obviously it's a sick cycle of, it's a chaos increasingly from our own making, and we continue to try to run. And, but that is where I say, we would definitely say we would begin. Now, along with the empathy piece, right, let's kind of shift gears for a second to these other questions, right? How can I put us back on a solid foundation? So let's talk about the spouse side of this equation for a minute. When Mark and I are working with spouses, and we work with many individually and in Dare to Connect, one of the concepts that we talk about is we borrow a quote from someone from the past that, you know, that many have heard. It says, trust but verify. Right. And what that means in the context of recovery for us is that we are asking spouses, you know, and inviting them and helping and working to help them recognize that if this marriage is to repair on some level, there is going to have to come a point where you are going to need to open your heart up to trust again. Today on Dare to Connect's very session, as we were talking about the rules around trauma and rebuilding a relationship, today's session was all about repair through accountability and responsibility following fallout. And this concept, this concept kind of came up that, you know, there is no way to repair and rebuild a relationship and the intimacy tied to it without trust being present or the willingness to trust. But that being said, it would be foolish and foolhardy for us to ever look a spouse in the eye and say, hey, just trust him again. Right? Spouses are understandably in this situation extremely skeptical, very defensive, and very closed off to putting themselves out there and being hurt again. And this listener who was courageous enough to send this in, he's no exception, right? Extended history of acting out deception and lies, not just in this relationship, but he's owned with his wife and been open about that his mass marriage failed in large part because of this. Yeah. And so when it comes to this part of the spouse, one can only imagine how scared and how fearful and how hesitant she is probably feeling in so many ways. It's not a lack of wanting to trust, but there is this, you know, how do I do that? Where's the safety? And so this trust but verify concept is something that we hope that she is able to relate to and connect with. And what that means for this listener that sent in these questions is that if she is going to be trusting, but also doing that only as she's able to verify things, then it is the onus of responsibility falls to us addicts to provide an environment that creates an ability and a capacity for her to verify, right? Exactly. Because when the rubber meets the road, the talk has become cheap. We actually talked about that on D2C today,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we did.
Now, some spouses, it's actually really triggering for them to hear from a partner, oh, I'm going to change, I'm going to be better.
Or an endless string of apologies. I'm so sorry.
Yes, right. Absolutely. I don't want you to apologize. I don't want you to talk. I don't want you to say one more word. I want to see something happen.
Right.
I need to see tangible evidence that this is changing, not just when it comes to sobriety, when it comes to the way you engage with me, you connect with me, and all that stuff. And there are a couple of pieces of that we can talk about.
Well, and again, as guys in recovery, if we're going to lead out with empathy, one of the ways to show true empathy is to support the trust but verify approach.
Absolutely.
I want to rebuild trust with my partner or my spouse. And I know that in order to do that, she needs to verify. In fact, I want her to verify. I don't want her to just take it on my word, because look what my word has been. Right. Mm-hmm. So now we get into this. If you guys want to show true empathy, when you can see that your partner or spouse is struggling, rather than allowing your brain to take you defensive or stoic or shut off or whatever, you lean in and say, you know what, sweetheart, I can see from my history how you could be having a hard time trusting me. I can really see that. I'm so sorry that I put you in that position. Nobody deserves to be in that place. Mm-hmm. And I want to do what I can to make amends and help you with this verification process. What do you need most today in order for me to work on reestablishing a little bit of trust?
Yeah.
Want the empathy steps? Right. There they are.
Absolutely. Right. And it does require that openness and that shame resiliency work, right? Because this is where addicts oftentimes trip up. We will say, hey, share with me your pain. Share with me the hard. Share with me how you're really doing or feeling or what needs to happen. A spouse will go to open themselves up to it. And what do? We shut down. We get defensive. Mm. What do you mean? Why would you need to see that from me? Our ego kicks in, right? Our shame kicks in. And what do? We end up confirming every single fear that our spouse is having about us.
I know.
In fact, not safe.
Guys need to understand.
Can't be trusted.
One of the healthy things as a spouse starts to get more healthy, one of the things they'll do is they'll, I call it sending up a trial balloon. Let me put myself out just a bit and see how he reacts or responds. Here comes the addict with defensiveness or, you know, minimization or justification or trying to turn the tables back on her. And what does her brain say? Yep. See, I knew it. I knew it. It's not safe yet. It's not safe.
Absolutely.
Now she goes back to hunkering down, right?
Absolutely. No, so true. So true. Well, when it comes to this verification process, so what can be done on our part, right? How do we begin to reestablish this? That the things that can be verified are going to be really, we can kind of break those down into two categories, recovery efforts and recovery results.
I like that. Right? Recovery efforts and recovery results.
So the efforts would kind of be all of the things that we are doing that are verifiable from a activity-based standpoint, right? My wife being able to see me attend meetings. For many chemical addiction meetings, some of you don't know this, but in 12-step groups, I know that especially with chemical addiction, this is very common. They oftentimes will actually pass out cards that verify whether or not you were at a meeting and the leader of the group will actually sign the card. Those who are in attendance, because there's been so much deception in the past, right?
Yeah.
So the attendance of meetings, right? Getting into therapy, being able to develop out a healthy support system, a program like Dare to Connect for addict spouses and couples, which happens to offer many of the benefits of therapy. It incorporates a weekly 12-step group and also 3 weekly sessions each week for both the addict and the spouse, as well as the couple. So not to put a shameless plug in there, but if your butt's not in Dare to Connect and if you haven't given it a try, get your butt in Dare to Connect and give it a try. because there are a few places I think you're going to find so many of those resources in one spot. But we'd love to have you come and give that a shot with a 2-week free trial at daretoconnectnow.com. There's a link there that you can grab that at and check that out with your partner. But yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
Big thing on this recovery effort side, we as guys need to remember this is not just things, you know, directly specifically related to my old addiction acting out.
Sure.
I also want to show recovery efforts in me working on the deeper issues, peeling back the layers. What led me to those acting out behaviors? And am I working on those? Am I showing more empathy? Am I showing more accountability? Shame resiliency, right? What do a lot of guys do when a spouse or partner starts to get raw and say, this is how you've hurt me. This is how I'm feeling today. This is how I'm doubting or fearing. And if a guy does his old defensiveness and shuts down or gets angry or gaslights or whatever, again, he tells her that you're not safe.
Yep.
So we want to show progress in all those various, I guess you could call them more subtle areas. We kind of refer to them as peeling back the layers to show that you're working on the causes, not just the symptoms. And it's important that your spouse see that.
Well, and that I think is where we kind of transition over into the results piece, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's certainly some things that result from this. Now, obviously, a first one is if we're doing the recovery process right, then we're going to want to see sobriety. Now, we understand that this guy that wrote in, along with many of you addicts who may be listening, or guys who struggle with sexual compulsion may be listening, is that, again, talk is cheap, right? Why? You may have a spouse who says, well, I don't know if you're actually sober. I've heard that song and dance 50 times. You know, how am I supposed to be able to know that for certain? Well, and that's a very valid question, because we get that from partners as well all the time. How do we know? How do we know change is happening? And so then what do? We look to all of the other results in tandem with the efforts.
Yes.
So for example, that shame resiliency that we talked about, a guy who is working a healthy recovery process, we often say in Dare to Connect that if you do recovery right, sobriety is almost a byproduct of the process. Mm-hmm. Rather than it being a focus, it ends up being something that happens kind of almost organically to some extent as you work the road. And the reason why is because true recovery involves not just stopping a poor behavior. It's about filling your life with all of the healthy behaviors that the poor behavior was trying to meet in the first place.
Right.
Right. And so when we talk about this results piece, guys who are working a healthy recovery and are truly working on things like empathy and their shame resilience, when they are confronted by a spouse or if their spouse flies off the handle in some sort of way or becomes reactive, their ability to tolerate and regulate themselves in those conditions and even lead in with pain and empathy, or lead into the pain and with empathy will increase significantly.
Yeah.
They'll be able to connect with that. They'll be able to manage their own internal defense mechanisms and their shame resiliency better. A guy who is in healthy recovery is going to develop out more of the proactivity component to recovery that we talk about all the time. Rather than holding up that prideful banner that says, I'll always be honest if asked, what do we teach guys, for example, in Dare to Connect? I'm not waiting for you to ask. Let me tell you how recovery is going today because I don't want you to wonder. Let me tell you what's going on today. Let me tell you and share with you the best parts of the day today, the hardest parts of the day, and what I did to work on the hard parts. That's the kind of work we do in Dare to Connect. That's the kind of work that is actually verifiable for a spouse. Developing out insight, we talk about that a lot in Dare to Connect. That is something that can't be faked. Mark and I won't throw Mark in this exact term, but I am definitely what you would refer to as a master bullshitter. And as a master bullshitter, I can tell you that even as somebody who was really good at minimizing and putting on a good show for people in different ways and things, it's one thing to be able to attend a meeting. It's another thing to be able to walk out of that meeting, be able to come home to my spouse excited and be able to say, this is what we talked about tonight, and this is how it tied into our marriage. This is something that I learned tonight that I can do differently or change. Or this is something that caused me to feel grateful for you, and this is the way it did, right? That kind of thing is not something that even the best of us out there, those best bull crappers, are able to do. And so being able to share insight into the process and actually not just say, hey, I'm fighting for you, but this is how, and this is how I'm changing.
Yeah.
When you put that all together, that makes for a pretty potent recipe for a partner to work in terms of finding safety. And
when being asked, how you doing? Oh, I'm good. I'm fine. Going back to that old dysfunctional habit, right? Fine, acronym for feelings I'm not expressing. I'm fine.
Yes.
Getting away from, because that does not restore trust. What restores mm-hmm. trust? Well, how am I doing? Let me think about that for a minute. Well, you know, here's what went good today. Here were some struggles that I had. What do we hear partners and spouses say? This guy was an addict for 10 or 20 or 30 years. He's been in recovery for a few months. When I ask him how he's doing, he says, fine. He doesn't have any of his old urges. He doesn't have any of his old challenges. He's good to go. And I'm supposed to believe that after decades of history? We as guys think, oh, if I tell her the truth, then it'll blow the trust and then it'll just put everything backwards. Actually, it's the opposite. Telling somebody we're fine and everything's good to go and I'm not having any more of those issues isn't credible. There's some sort of struggle. There's always some sort of, hopefully, way that I'm, you know, processing through things and trying to become mindful of different old ways of thinking and character defects and old addiction habits. We need to be sharing these struggles and, very importantly, what we're doing with them and about them. Yeah, I struggled, but here's what I did. Here's what I did different than I've done in the past. Here's how I plugged into my support system. Here's how I used my mindfulness. Here's how I journaled. Here's how I called my accountability partner. When a partner spouse hears all of that, she's like, wow, okay, this guy's fighting for us. He's fighting for us. And that starts to restore the trust.
Yeah, it gives tangible results that a partner can actually can grab onto, can hold onto, can connect with.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many, many parts to this. So the last part that we'll mention just briefly as we wrap up here is one final consideration, because this wasn't talked about in the submission at all. And we'd say this in response to every act out there listening. Are you making the time and resources available for your spouse to be able to heal?
Yes.
Are you freeing that time and those resources up? We know that therapy is expensive. We know that Dare to Connect is a cost. We know that engaging recovery is not cheap either financially at times or when it comes to just resource wise. So making those time and those resources, whether it's watching the kids or other things, that is something that, you know, we would say that a guy who's really working the process is going to have to do. We understand that oftentimes requires sacrifices. As a guy who has bought several cars from my prior therapist over time, I can connect with that because it is just that much. But I can tell you that it was all worth it because my marriage, my relationship, it's worth it. And what we have now, I wouldn't trade for anything. But it is a sacrifice, and that is part of the process. That's part of the accountability. That's part of, you know, that may mean less golf games, guys. That may mean more bologna sandwiches at lunch. That may mean whatever. But part of connecting with our spouse's pain is recognizing, not in a shame-based way, but in a healthy way, your spouse didn't bring you here. You brought you here. And even though there are real reasons why you did that and we can connect with that, reasons cannot become excuses. At the end of the day, we are accountable for ensuring that we set the stage. Your partner is going to do what they're going to do with their recovery. Nobody can force their partner into recovery. We would never suggest that. But it is our job to create the most fertile ground in which that can blossom.
Yeah. So. Love it. Love it. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for being with us here today. Again, we would love to have you come over to Dare to Connect, where we go into all of this in great detail 4 times a week with both of us as therapists. So come on over to daretoconnectnow.com. Try the two-week free trial and come spend some time with us. We think you're going to like it.
Take a look. See what it's about.
Yeah. If you have questions for us in the PBSE podcast, send them through to pbsepodcast.com in the contact form. And we would love to address your questions. So
awesome.
Have a great day, rest of your week, and we'll catch up with you in our next episode.
Take care, everybody. Everything expressed on the PBSE podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.